Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and always good to be here, and always fun to be on air with you guys. And we got an action-packed show today, but you know, I tell you, I can officially say that as I look around the scope of the markets, as I look around the scope of the economy, I can say, in my opinion, that we have definitely turned over to the other side of the market. And what I mean, it doesn't mean that we're going down today. It doesn't mean we're going down tomorrow. But I think that we have now rotated over from everybody buying every dip and just trying to get in and chasing the yield to possibly starting to look to sell the rallies. And the importance of understanding that is just the dynamics of how the market works. But it looks to me that although I don't think they can raise rates, I don't think that they should raise rates, but it appears to me that, and certainly appears to the bond market, that the rates are going higher now. Okay. I mean, we can see, if you look at the 10-year had a key level that it broke out of it at 2.19. And now it continues to spike higher. And that's the bond market is telling you that they believe the Fed is going to raise rates sooner rather than later. Again, I don't think that they can. But you know, what I think doesn't matter. All that matters is what Janet Yellen and that crew think. They take care of, you know, what we call the interest rates. Now, again, the bond markets are signaling an interest rate rise, and you know, as the crow flies, as we see it, we'll see what happens. You know, I don't think they can raise. I don't think they should raise now. But they may, and that is obviously creating a little bit of pressure on the market. And at the end of the day, it'll be what it'll be, and we'll see. But it certainly is the worm hath turned, and we'll see if indeed I'm right. But I think that you'll find out, and you'll see, because all of a sudden volatility is not getting crushed. It's certainly not in a good life, a good spot. But it's not getting crushed either, as you would expect it to do in a market that always gets dipped, you know, but every dip gets bought up. And it doesn't seem to me that the dip buyers are as active as they were in the past. It seems to me you're seeing what we call a rotation out of the higher risk and into the safer stocks, because there are certain funds that have to always be in the market, and all they do is they rotate from higher risk to lower risk. So, you know, we'll see at the end of the day how it all plays out. But, you know, certainly we saw, you know, a dramatic move overnight, and we'll see, you know, how the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey says, the rest of the story plays out. But I would be very comfortable now looking to work and be a seller into rallies in this market, because I think that you've now seen a change. And again, as I said, the worm is turning. And if the worm turns, that's always good for traders, because if you get more action and you get more volatility in the market, that creates more opportunities to trade forward. Now, you know, when you're looking at your own portfolio, of course, we never recommend, you know, dumping or just selling just to sell. But these are the times now that, and this is a key point, guys. This is where many people make the huge mistake of panicking or holding or not holding. And this is where you got to say, you know what? I need to be getting out of my portfolio, but I don't want to sell stocks. So how do you do that? Well, what you do is just you start to hedge that portfolio. You start to put yourself in a position that you actually welcome a sell-off in the market, okay? You get to a point where you welcome that sell-off, because if you're hedged properly, then when the market does sell off, you save a ton of dough on going down, and you accumulate a lot of cash off of your own position. And then when the markets become back the other way, you then take that money that you've now saved and you accumulate more stock. So instead of losing money and being out and wondering what hit you, you're making money and you're allowing yourself to buy and accumulate more stock. Now, that's a pretty cool position to be in. And that's what so few people in the world, and I'm talking about even the professional, the expert supposedly, don't get, is you can put yourself in that position. You can do it by yourself. You don't need any, all you have to do is learn how to do it. Now, we did a webinar on this subject, and I'd be happy to send it to anybody who'd like it. Okay, I just email me at bub@thebubbashow.org, because I believe that this is the best course of action that anybody can take, is to put themselves in a hedged position where you benefit, no matter which way the market goes. You allow yourself to accumulate more cash. So instead of losing money and sweating at night, you go to bed hoping the market collapses at night, because you're going to collect all that money that you hedged out. And you're going to have money to now buy more stock without having to reach into your pocket. And you're not going to affect your overall balance. Because at the end of the day, what we're concerned about is the principal, right? We're concerned about protecting, now depending on where you are in your life, you want to protect your assets. You want to protect your money. You want to protect your inventory. And the way you do that is if you have a good hedged portfolio, then you're not going to lose. So if you've got a portfolio, let's say $10,000, you want to protect it, you can. You got a million, you can. You got 100 million, you can. And that's the things that, you know, the Badger and I work with people on all the time, is how to wind and put the right position on that will allow you to protect your portfolio, so you don't have to worry about getting stopped out. You don't have to worry about if the market falls, because again, you benefit either way. If we keep going up, your long positions carry you forward, and the hedge you put on is such a minimal risk and has such minimal cost that you don't have to worry. Okay, and these are things that are very important, and these are things we talk about relentlessly and constantly, because it's important you, the shareholder, you, the investor, have protection so you don't have to worry about those bad things that can happen to good people. And that, my friends, is what we want to make sure, and that's what the Bubba Show is all about. That's what Bubba Trading is all about. It's about working with individuals, showing you how to do things in a better way. Okay. It's like we're like hitting instructors in the major leagues, but you know what we can do because of how we do it? We can make you, instead of a 300 hitter, which is considered very successful in the major leagues, we can make you an 800 hitter. Okay. And those are the things that we want you to look into. And, you know, that's why we have the Bubba Report, because it teaches you and gives you better ideas of how to go forward and take care of your own personal portfolio. And the new Bubba Report is out. And all you have to do to get that is go to thebubbashow.org. You can buy it right online there. $99 a year. You'll get a minimum of 12 issues of the Bubba Report that shows my own proprietary indexes. Okay, because what I've done is I've combined things because I think I have a better handle on it. It has the writings of Keith Bliss, nationally known TV guy on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg, and I traded the NYSE. It's got Scott Chalady, very well known for being, especially on Varney. Okay, guy wears the cow jacket. We've got the Badger, and we've got Bonnie Pittenger and myself. And those are things that I want you to be better, because I want you to to make money and be happier and at least be able to sleep at night not worrying about what's going on in the markets. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with Jane King. Give it to me easy. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, you know, when I need to smile, I got to call on my friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report. All over the world, she's becoming an entity of everywhere, and you can find her. And if you're in her area where you can see her, you got to watch her on the tube, because my friend knows it. She's smart, and she's got it all going on. What's up, Jane?
Hi, Todd. Well, you know, it's funny because today I met for the first time the former Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner. He's here at the NASDAQ doing an interview, and so... You know, some people get excited about Beyonce and Jay-Z. I get excited about Treasury Secretaries. I guess I'm a nerd. But anyway, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan, but, you know, it would be nice to meet him. I mean, you know, it's always exciting to have, you know, people that have that much power, you know, come and hang around with you, right, for a little bit. That's a pretty exciting a thing when you look at it, because, you know, obviously these people that have power, I mean, they control your destiny, right?
Well, you know, I was sitting there like, because I walked in to the green room here at the NASDAQ, and he was sitting there. I was like, oh my goodness, it's Tim Geithner. And so I introduced myself, and then I kind of like, after I talked to him briefly, I started thinking about everything that he went through with Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke and the whole crisis and all that stuff. And I started kind of like getting a little nervous, like, oh my goodness, like I just met this guy and he was really like there when this country was going through its most severe crisis in decades and decades. So anyway, it was kind of a cool thing. Made my Thursday a little more interesting.
You know, I mean, we're still in the crisis. So what do you now? So since he's there and we're talking about it, what do you think of the crisis? Where are we in Jane King's view? I mean, you know, you have, again, you're one of a unique individual because you've got a Midwest background, but you've become a New Yorker. So you kind of see different things all over the place. So, you know, Jane King, you're looking at the economy. How'd they do? And how do you think, where are we in the crisis other than the stock markets, you know, close to record highs?
Well, you know, I guess looking back at 2008, 2009, I never would have dreamed we'd be where we are in terms of stocks. But then I also never would have dreamed that we would have the Fed still accommodating with the economy, with low interest rates, with bond purchases for as long as they did. And so many central banks, really. Of course, we're seeing a little bit of a change in that. Interest rates took a sudden jump up this week, but that's another story. But I do believe when we were in the depths of the crisis that they did the right thing by coming in and rescuing and making the banks merge. And I mean, can you imagine, I mean, being Hank Paulson when all of that was going on? Now, I kind of would like to see them let this economy survive on its own at this point. I think that we're becoming addicted to easy money. Americans are becoming addicted to it. The stock market is becoming addicted to it. And I don't think that's long-term healthy for the economy.
Well, and I agree, you know, 100% with you that I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's great. Because I don't think the economy itself is very healthy. Just because, you know, we see earnings after earnings come out, and yes, they make on the bottom line, but the real important line for everybody is growth, and we're not really seeing the growth. Are you seeing any growth anywhere from what you do?
Well, I guess that there's companies here and there that are seeing growth, but you're right. I mean, it's a mixed bag, and the easy money doesn't really address the underlying problem that we have with the economy in terms of everybody participating, the lowest income people being able to enjoy the economy by getting better jobs. I mean, it does seem like that we have become a more unequal country since the financial crisis, and a lot of that's because of the Fed's policy, and a lot of the money has been gained by people who have equities in the stock market or homes, which, of course, has pretty much rebounded across in many cities. So, you know, we need to figure out how to get everybody participating, or at least a greater percentage of people participating in this, or it's going to lead to problems down the road.
Do you see that happening anytime soon? I mean, you know, again, I love what you do, and I know who you are. Do you see that happening anytime soon where they can get everybody back involved?
Well, there's going to have to be some huge structural changes, I think, for it has a big impact. You know, there's stories here and there, like Google, for example, this week. So they're going to invest $150 million in diversity. And one of the things they're going to do is widen their recruiting to more universities. Now, I have some friends who work at Google here in New York, and they're Purdue grads like I am. And they say it's very, very unusual to have a Big Ten grad work at Google. It's very Ivy League oriented. So, you know, I think this is a good idea that that Google is doing this. You know, you hear other things. I mean, the minimum wage, you know, Gap, McDonald's, some of these companies are taking the initiative in raising the minimum wage. But it's still, I feel like our education system is still lacking in terms of preparing people for work, the stamina of work, how much is expected of you. We could do more. We could do apprenticeship programs, I think, would help people. People seem to graduate from schools and not have a lot of practical knowledge, but yet they've got a lot of degrees. And I think that gap needs to be fixed.
Exactly. I mean, now, you know, you talk about schools and education and who they go. Now, I find it kind of frightening, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but I find it kind of frightening at the cost of education, because based on today, you know, where's anybody going to go to make back that $300,000 that they have to spend to go to school?
Well, what can you possibly do as a career to make that kind of money? A lawyer, own your own business. You can work maybe on Wall Street and make that kind of money, although those salaries have been going down. I mean, there's really only about three or four jobs where you're actually going to be able to make that kind of money. And it's not just college. I was at, my son does a basketball league, and it's at a private school here in New York, K through 12. And just for kicks, I looked up how much it was to go to the school, $47,000 a year. To go to this school. I mean, it's like kindergarten through 12th grade. And you haven't even gone to college at that point. So it feels like education is just really, and I agree, education is extremely important, but it just feels like they're really kind of taking advantage of people and just charging. And people are paying it. People are paying all this. They think it's still worth it.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously it probably is, but you know, the problem is, you know, unless, you know, that really separates the classes, because, you know, 95% of the population could never send their kids to those kind of schools. So,
my goodness, can you imagine? I mean, $47,000 a year for kindergartners. And you're talking $1.5 million before they even graduate from high school that you've invested in education. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, 1% of people can send their kids to a school like that.
You know, you know, I find it hard, and I find it hard to believe. And again, we talk about the separation of classes, and you know how we continue to move back and forth, and you know we continue to build entitlement programs for those who need it. And to me, it looks like a little bit of a mess. Do you see a light at the end of this tunnel?
Well, I would like to see these programs attach more to them, more. You know, qualifications, more requirements. I mean, if you're going to be getting money, I want to see more education, more training going along with that. You know, I know that jobless claims here in New York, if you're filing for weekly unemployment benefits, you have to show that you looked for jobs, and you have to name where you've gone and your contact person there. They provide a lot of resources for people, resume writing, you know, contacts to get more education. So, and I know that California does not do that. So I'd like to see more requirement of people, if they're getting some of these benefits, to really show that they're moving toward a goal of being independent and not on government money.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad state, you know, we have this, and you know, and then we look into, you know, what's going on in other parts of the country, and you know, oil has been moving up highly again. You know, everybody said that it was going down, and I just want to know, where did all that money we were supposed to get that was going to go back in the economy that we were going to save on the cost of oil?
Well, you know, I mean, I think people saved it. I mean, I just think, you know, there's not a lot of stuff out there that I think people feel like they need anymore. I mean, there's not a really compelling reason to, you know, go buy new clothes. And I mean, outside of electronical devices, I mean, people aren't really spending money on much stuff right now. And I think they'd rather pay down debt. And even though, you know, there's, you know, I don't have a car, but I mean, you maybe save, you know, $20, $50 a week or something on gas. I mean, people are still wanting to apply that to debt or to save it instead of going out and spending more money, which I'm sure the Fed doesn't like.
Well, they guessed it wrong, and of course they can trade the markets, and that's been proven in history. But Jane King, as always, you bring a great, interesting light to the Bubba Show. We love having you on, and we love the Ka-Ching Report. It's awesome. Jane King, thanks so much for being here. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show. Make sure you get the Ka-Ching Report. You can get it right on thebubbashow.org. We'll be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, my regular, my ETF expert, my friend, my man, my trading pal, Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
It's always a pleasure. You bring a lot to the party. So it seems to me, my friend, that there's a little change in overall sentiment in the overall market here, and it just feels different than it has felt in the past. What are you thinking? What are you feeling?
Yeah, it's very similar. I think a bit of the law of unintended consequences might be kicking in, and that is, you know, a lot of us, we know it's an uncertain future. It always is. But the data has been still coming in weak, and the Federal Reserve rhetoric is still somewhat hawkish, and that's somewhat of a scary thing. But I think Janet Yellen made it clear yesterday. She made a comment that stock valuations, this was this week, were quite high and bond yields are a little bit low. So the market's a little bit concerned about that. But we remember Greenspan. Alan Greenspan had his irrational exuberance statement, who knows, way back when, and markets corrected shortly and then went back up. But I think overall the situation is the data in the United States have been low. If you look at these economic surprise indexes, they're at multi-year lows, and we're all concerned about that. Hopefully it's just because of winter and it'll come back. But even despite that, the Fed has said, oh, it's transitory and everything will be fine, we'll come back. So I think right now the market's a bit concerned and volatility is picking up. But if you look at it overall, volatility is still very low, and that is, you can measure that by the VIX, the volatility index in S&P 500. The average historically is around 19-20%, and currently it's around 14-15%, so it's still quite low.
Well, I think it's very low. Now, I guess the question is we've been obviously extremely low for quite a while. We've had a couple of bursts up to, you know, the 20 level. But basically, I mean, you know, I know the 20-year moving average is around 20. But I would say if we went back and looked at the 10-year moving average, we're probably somewhere around 15. What do you think?
You mean the VIX?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's actually just the last 3 or 4 years. It's been averaging around 13. And, you know, we got as high as 80 during the crisis. Now, that was extremely high. Way before the crisis, it got down to 10 and stayed there in, like, late 2006. And that's the kind of the lesson in volatility, as we discussed earlier. It's always mean reverting. Anytime you really have high volatility, at some point it'll go back to being low, where people, you know, they'll get too cautious. And when it gets way too low, people get too complacent, which is what it is now. And oftentimes it goes back up, and that's kind of where we are right now. Just questions. You never know. You never can pick the timing.
No, well, of course you can't time the market, because obviously many have tried and gone broke trying to do so. So we know that the timing the market is a virtual impossibility, because, you know, I can say for a year I've been saying, you know, I'm a little bit concerned here. I don't see it, but of course the markets continue to work their way higher, and that's always the danger of trying to pick a market top or a market bottom, and that's where some of your products come into play, you know, when you're looking, because those are things that you're going to hold on to, and they're not necessarily as dependent, you know, on the overall markets, and you're not really trying to pick a top or a bottom. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Well, it depends on some of the products. Like, for instance, our equity products, we have our Zacks earnings indices, and those are designed for buy and hold investors. In fact, I was at a conference with some wealth managers. One of them mentioned, you know, trading in and out of it. And I said, we don't suggest that. To really get that long-term alpha, where you outperform the market in the Zacks index earnings index, you have to be in for the long term. And even in our smart beta products, which are, you know, our diversified factor ETFs, they're just designed to beat the S&P. To really do that, you're supposed to be in it for a long run, not trade. And that's the way we look at it. And I think also that's been kind of what's been happening. I think a lot of people in the market get that. So if you look at ETF flows this year, there's been overall pretty positive flows. Just the last few weeks have been negative. They've been coming out of the market a little bit, but overall positive on the year. But the biggest significant flows have been out of U.S. Products that track the S&P 500, or beta products. And what we're seeing is people are getting out of those products, which have done very well the last few years overall, at least in ETFs, and they're migrating to more diversified products like overseas bonds and to smart beta, which means products that are designed to do better than the S&P 500 in the long term.
Now, you know, we often talk about the S&P 500 and the benchmark against the S&P 500. In your opinion, why do we care so much about benchmarking against the S&P when the stock market itself is not even in the top five of largest investment opportunities or markets?
Well, I think the first way to describe it is this is part of the experience I learned by working at S&P. I was worked there for 6 years. And one thing I learned working behind the wall, where there's a wall there when people actually create the indices and they have to be separated from everybody else because they have material non-public information, is you learn that the S&P 500 is designed to measure the market. By measuring the market means it has to be weighed by the capitalization of those stocks, means how much they have in terms of their value and the price. And so if you look at the S&P 500, there's 500 stocks. But the actual 100 top stocks, you know, are basically over 60% of the weights in that index, and the rest of them really not even, you know, don't really show much. They don't really impact the index, because that's just the way you need to do it to measure the market. For instance, you know, GE has to have a greater weight than Illinois Tool Works. That's just the way it has to be. But it's not the best way to perform in the market. And that's what we try to focus on, is products for investors to perform in the market. And that's the big difference, where everybody looks at the S&P. It's a great way to trade and hedge. But generally, it's not. It measures the market. It's not the best way to really perform in the market in the long term. And that's what we really always focus on. And then, of course, there's always other assets. The biggest assets for most of our listeners are their homes.
Right. And so, you know, when you're looking and you're, you know, again, your products and you are designed to be in for the longer term haul. You're not into the short term trade. And obviously they're built on performance, and actually through your ETFs, you can build a portfolio yourself that is, you know, I like to always compare things to like what we call the endowment type model, where, you know, we're not going to always hit the home run, but we're not going to strike out a lot. We're going to kind of just steadily move forward, because we can kind of diversify risk through different avenues through your ETFs. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Well, we have two different products. First, we have traditionally been known for physically backed precious metals, which I can just point out. Those are very simple. If you want to get involved in gold, silver, platinum, palladium, you just buy the physically backed precious metal, and the ETF is simple. You have you basically get that spot price. You never have to worry about a derivative in the futures market, and that's all straight and clear. But we needed to expand, and we found into different products. We found an area that was really not really being capitalized and being properly and addressed. And the way we really made our decision was very simple: follow the institutional money. And that is what we did with Scientific Beta. Scientific Beta is a firm that we use that creates indices that are purely designed for smart beta institutions. And they have $7 billion of institutional money tracking their indices. So that was easy. That's why we created a diversified factor ETF, is follow the institutional money. There's no ETFs in this product. If the institution thinks it's good, then we like it. And so we created our SBUS product and the SBEU. And then we also have ZAX. And the reason we track ZAX is ZAX, based in Chicago, has, I think, $4 to $5 billion of mutual funds tracking their methodologies and their indices, and no ETF. So we figure, okay, here's a good place to provide an ETF, so the average investor can get exposure to where the more the institutionals have been in the past. And that's that's just basic and simple.
So we look around and we we've talked about this, and you have said sometimes it's time to say thank you very much, let me take my money and move on. Now, I mean, and we agreed on that concept and that principle. And then, of course, we both feel that, a diversification, being in, because obviously, especially in today's world, you have to go somewhere with your money. I mean, you're not going to put it under the mattress. There's no value there. So as you move into these products that you have and that you use, you can actually diversify out and put yourself in. And again, it doesn't assure you that you're going to make money tomorrow or the next day. But what it does do is it puts you in pretty solid positions that should develop and kind of sometimes work against each other, but at the end of the day should create a net yield over time. Yes,
exactly. Well, Zach's earnings, exactly. They're designed to provide, pick the stocks in the market that are expected to have the better earnings in the future, not the best earnings from the past. And that's a big difference with a lot of methodologies. And that's why, we're this ETF provider. So we focused on their methodology, which is really focusing on earnings estimate revisions. And that is this trend that all the analysts have in earnings estimates. Which way are they going? Are they estimating, are they taking their earnings estimates lower, or are they taking them higher? And that's what Zax does. And the whole idea is to be able to focus on the future and, again, buy and hold long-term diversification. Yeah, sure, right now the market's looking a little bit dicey, but, these things will happen. You have to expect that. And there's times of underweight and overweight. But, market timing is a difficult thing. And that's where also I've been a bit concerned lately, where, there's been really no place to hide. Even the bond market's been a little bit weak. But, again, this is just short-term fluctuations. In the long term, you have to minimal when you invest, have at least 6 months outlook, and take advantage of the short-term fluctuations to maybe move some money. So when you think equities are rich or cheap, you can move things around. We think precious metals are rich or cheap, moving around. But try not to get sucked into these day-to-day, even week-to-week fluctuations, which we're having right now.
Right. Well, and I agree with that. And look, I'm a trader, and my mind is as of a trader, but long-term investors should not be looking day-to-day. They shouldn't be working tick-to-tick, because at the end of the day, they're just in there to invest and let the market grow. And you can do things to protect, but trying to time in and out of the market never seems to work well. You have to just set yourself up to let things work. So if you're an investor, you put yourself into a position and you make it diversified, and you're set up, and you let the markets trade. And sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. But at the end, we know that there should be some capital appreciation based on history and based on the products that we're using. We're going to come back after the break with my man Mike McClone, ETFsecurities.com, because again, this man's got a great opinion of the market, but more important, he understands that we cannot live on a day-to-day basis, especially as an investor. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with Mike McClone from ETFsecurities.com. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, hanging out with my man, Mike McClone, ETFsecurities.com. So, Mike, we and I have talked about this quite a bit, but I want you to explain to the listeners what this really means. And there's a term that we talk about a lot, mean reversion. And, you know, I think you believe that April was kind of a mean reversion month. Give us some background and what you're talking about when you talk about mean reversion.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I'm just completing my precious metals monthly for the month of April. It'll be on the website hopefully soon. And I had to put a definition there. Mean reversion is when prices return and returns move back toward the mean or average. And I mean, that's simple, but it's always the thing we always like to carry around in the pits is, okay, well, what's your mean? How do you define that? So a good thing that really happened in April is the dollar went down a little bit, but the dollar's been so strong lately, it just came back a little bit. It just got too far and came back. So mean reversion is when you just go too far in one way and you come back. Another thing is crude oil. Crude oil had the best month in 6 years in April. It was up about 25%, but you know, it's still at $60 a barrel. Now, if you had said that a year ago, that crude oil would be at $60 a barrel right now, we'd say, oh, that's way too cheap, or no way. And it's just coming back a little bit. And that's like what we talked earlier when crude oil got down below 50. We said, it's very simple. You just, you know, sometimes things are just too cheap. The rubber band will snap them back. And that's what I think really happened. So that's really what was the story of last month. The thing that was kind of odd, I find confusing, was despite, you know, the dollar taking a dropping and crude oil going back, generally in that environment you expect gold to go up, and it didn't. And I think the main reason was because the stock market made new highs, continued to make new highs in volatility, and the continued to stay low. And traditionally gold has been a good, you know, it's been the diversifier, it's an alternative asset, safe haven. It's supposed to zig when everything else zags, and so it's still kind of marking time and waiting for whatever the next impetus will be to move.
Now, you know, we've seen, and this is really up in your wheelhouse, but, you know, obviously the bonds are pricing in, like, relentlessly that there's going to be a rate increase sooner than later now. Now, you know, obviously for a long time it wasn't even close, but we now see the 10-year making new recent highs. Obviously the bond futures have been just getting pummeled lately. What do you think? Can they raise rates? Are they going to raise rates, or should they raise rates?
I think all of the above, no. I think they're living a dream, and that's of the old days when they would, for the main purpose, the Fed would raise rates, which, look at 2004, the last time it started a tightening cycle, was to suppress potential inflationary forces, or as a former governor said, to take away the punch bowl. And to me, in this environment, the main reason they want to raise rates, I think, is what they've been saying. They're a little bit worried about some of the excesses in asset values. Now, they said that. Yellen said that. That's fine. So that means that that's okay. It might not impact asset value so much. But if you really look at the data compared to the last time they had a raise, they started a tightening cycle. We're far from where you should start a tightening cycle. First of all, you start inflation. Inflation is near zero. Okay, now you measure it. GDP is running near zero. That's how you measure it. Let's look at retail sales. The last time they started a tightening cycle, retail sales on a 12-month basis were running around 6%. If you look at the last 12 months of retail sales, it's running 1.3%. So there's nowhere near that. And then you add in things like food stamps. There's 50 million people on food stamps. Car sales are coming out 16.5 million. That's great. That's the same rate we know we averaged before the crisis in the year 2000. But if you look at that as a percentage of population, it's really not that great. The population has grown since that back then, maybe 6, 7%. So overall, I think what the Fed's trying to do is be responsible and warn the market that, yes, things have got a little bit out of hand. We want to just put a little bit of a punch bowl here. We really don't expect to raise rates, but we have to warn you that we will. Now, to me, the dream is that we have this massive demand pull, inflation picking up environment, and the Fed starts tightening. That's what happened in the 90s for a while, and I just, you know, I'd love to see that, but I'm just more realistic and just don't see it. And there's just too many people on food stamps in this country, I think, for the Fed to really think that, you know, things are that much better.
Now, when you look at the Federal Reserve, how would you rate the job that they've done?
Well, this is where you and I diverge a little bit, because we might disagree a little bit. I think what they did and after the crisis was tremendous, but I think the main thing they didn't do is, I'm just not a fan of printing money. I think it's just so risky, and I'm really worried about the law of unintended consequences. I think what they should have done, and even one of them said, I think Dudley, who was the governor of New York, said that we probably should have started quantitative easing back the minute that the S&P 500 took out the old highs. That was in Q1, or the first half of 2013. The problem is they kept doing that. So that was about 1,500. Now we're at 2,000. I think so they might have overstayed that welcome a little too much. And just, I don't I'm not a fan of printing money. It's just too risky. Yes, I can see creating liquidity, have zero rates, and I think that's where they went a little bit overboard, and I think that's what we're going to go through now is potential, the law of unintended consequences, what happens when you maybe stay your welcome. If anything, the risk is they're trying, you know, like you mentioned, trying to trade the market from is a bit scary. Now, that's what some people claim, but overall, I think they've done a great job, and I just, a good job. Now, this is you and I diverge, but just not a fan of printing money. Please, that's just, you know, let us get out of this ourselves. Let the economy grow organically. And yes, there might be a little bit of pain, but from a long-term standpoint, that's probably the best thing to happen.
We don't diverge at all. We're on, not only are we diverging, we're on completely opposite sides because I think the Fed sucks. And I think they did a horrible job. And again, the bailout of the banks, which, okay, I've never been able to make up my mind on that initial. But once that was over, what happened to free market capitalism and letting markets trade? I mean, you know, if you lose your job and can't pay your mortgage and they want to throw you out in the street, okay, I don't know who's going to come. Who's going to come and print money for you?
Well, exactly, and that's part of the problem with this whole printing money. It favors the banks. It favors some of those entities that really have that were, you know, had a promiscuous activity and should not have been. You know, excessively offering loans and things like that. But, you know, overall, the Fed is supposed to help the entire economy. I'm just afraid when they try to help us too much, and that's with the quantitative easing. And now, hopefully, we'll get through this period. The market will grow organically, and it'd be wonderful if they have to start tightening a little because inflation's picking up. But I just, you know, I still think that's a dream.
All right, now, we've seen the dollar. You know, the dollar was on fire and just, you know, the euro was going to go to par and, you know, all the currencies are going to go around the world. Now, of course, the euro's had a dramatic rally. I mean, you know, 8 cents in the euro currency. I mean, if you think about it, it's 10 grand per one contract. Do you suspect that Mario Draghi will be coming out shortly and making some sort of announcement saying, hey, we need to weaken this thing? I mean, obviously, I won't say it like that, but we know that the world currencies, like, you know, every race to the bottom. Do you expect Mario Draghi to come out soon and say, hey, you know, maybe we need to, you know, do something?
I'm afraid of what they're doing there. That statement from him that we will continue to effectively do quantitative easing and print money until inflation increases, to me, is very scary. Now, eventually, that first thing that means is you're supposed to debase the currency. Now, we've had some of that. The fact that the currency's come back. But the main reason the dollar's pulled back from its highs is, number one, we had all this tightening priced in earlier as the U.S. economy was supposed to pick up relative to the rest of the world, and that seems to be fading. The U.S. economy is not doing as strong. Some of this tightening's coming out. In fact, interest rates in Europe have finally picked up a little bit from zero. What I'm afraid of is this volatility in the bond markets. But if you really look at the U.S. dollar, bottom line is, bigger picture, the last time the Fed started a tightening cycle in this country, the debt to GDP in this country was about 60%. Now we're over 100%. And the only way to get out of that is to either pay it off, which we're not doing, or to grow. You have to grow out of it. You have to expand faster. And I, you know, it's just not happening. You know, right now, GDP is running 1% or zero. Maybe we'll run 2% in the year, and the debt's growing 3 to 4%. We have to grow at a greater rate than that in a long for a long term. I just don't see how that's going to happen, and that's where I really always divert back to the safe haven, precious metals, glitter. I mean, I like the basket. I can't pick a specific precious metal, but that trend and debt GDP globally, certainly here, is what really gives me fear the most in the long term for my kids and their kids. There's no way out of it unless you really do some kind of, you know, paradigm shift in the economy. We can just start creating money. I don't see it.
Right. No, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, again, that's where I have problems because we are not just the rich. We're everybody. And unfortunately, the only people that really benefit throughout this whole mess was the very wealthy. And that's where, you know, a socialistic economy in which we've developed all of a sudden has really taken control and hurt everything. And in the end of the day, you know, we're seeing it now with earnings missing. Oh, my goodness gracious, we're running out of time. Well, you know, we'll have to come back with Mike next week. But this has been Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. Check out their website. Check out their products. They are phenomenal ETFs, and they give you a lot of great ideas and not the old standard, you know, not your father's ETF. These are really great, solid products for everybody. Check them out. Mike McClone, ETFSecurities.com. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Todd.
This has been The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and Always great to have Mike on. He just brings a great perspective. And make sure you check out their website at etfsecurities.com. This is the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks so much.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab
the... Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.